Welcome to the F News Podcast. We're your hosts,
Emily Rich
and Mika McIntosh. Stay tuned for the news.
Yeah, so for our news section today, let's talk about... I read an article in The Atlantic today about, you know, it had a great headline. It was called Bill Clinton, A Reckoning.
And which is truly an article for our times, if our times were the 1990s.
Yeah, but like, which is what I thought, which is why I clicked it initially, right? Because it's like, why are we talking about this now?
Right.
The article made a kind of a really excellent link to right now in that we have all of our news, the hand we've been dealt as news podcasters today is that it feels like all of the news is about sexual assault right now. Women coming forward, men coming forward with stories about assaults on them by, you know, people in power, whether that is a Hollywood person or a political person. And the writer of this article was basically saying, there's a history here where these women who would come forward weren't believed, even by feminists, by Gloria Steinem, people who we think of as paragons of feminism, just didn't believe these women when they came forward for Bill Clinton, to accuse Bill Clinton. And it was basically like, Gloria Steinem wrote an opinion piece for the New York Times at the time when Monica Lewinsky came forward, and then subsequently several other women came forward and accused him of violent assaults on them. And Gloria Steinem wrote an opinion piece that basically was like, as feminists, we don't need to call out this man for this. He's making a pass at them, and what he does on his own time in his own a hotel room or in his office isn't any of our business.
Right, because they didn't want to take down their democratic powerhouse.
Right. And they basically, the article makes a point to say, this is probably for Gloria Steinem now, looking back on this, this is probably one of her things where she's like, if I could take anything back, this is the article, this is the opinion I would take back, because it really does, the original Gloria Steinem article does situate feminism as something inherently linked to the Democratic Party, and like without the Democratic Party could not exist or would not exist. And if we take down the president, who is a Democrat, then we're taking ourselves down. And it was kind of this weird tit for tat sort of situation, which is maybe not the right choice of words in this particular case. Is sort of how she had framed it. And but the point of the article being that the thing that is surprising or new about these women who are coming forward, these men who are coming forward and accusing Roy Moore or Kevin Spacey or Harvey Weinstein, is that they're being believed.
Yeah, that's what's really surprising me, because a year ago, I wouldn't have thought that this would be happening. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like back end of 2017, just most of 2017, yeah, you have people coming forward and they're being believed. Mm-hmm. And growing up, I was just always under the assumption that the victim would never be believed.
Right. And that's always and we were the same age, so we came up around the same time. And that was always you know, in popular, even in popular culture, that was always the understanding, is that even on something like SVU, like this was a phrase that
I was just thinking SVU.
That, like, this is a phrase that abusers use, or that just people around victims of abuse use, is that, like, if you come forward, no one's going to believe you. And of course, SVU does a pretty good job about, like, these cops on this show, these fictional cops on this fictional show, believe the survivors on the show. So it's really good about saying they ought to be believed, whether or not the police actually in practice believe is a whole other story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the really, and it's a good thing that they're being believed, you know? It's a move forward to assume that a survivor or someone who is alleging sexual assault, they're very often, they're not lying. It's statistically improbable that they would be, especially when more than one person's coming forward. You know, Roy Moore, 30 women have come forward.
That many?
Yeah, I think that's based on an article I read earlier today.
Damn, like a lot of these, the people have been called out too. It's not a one and done thing. Like,
oh, so no.
Like Kevin Spacey.
It's a pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah. And 2 weeks ago, you and I sat down and did like a test run for this podcast. And that was the day that the Kevin Spacey news was coming out. And at that point, it was only Anthony Rapp who had come forward. And since, like, several other people have come forward.
It's basically been said that it's common knowledge on film sets, like House of Cards. Kevin Spacey makes those environments toxic. Mm-hmm. If you are a young man under the age of 30, like, it's almost guaranteed that if you are attractive, he will make a pass at you.
Yeah. And that's sort of right after the Harvey Weinstein news broke, or people came forward about Harvey Weinstein. There was a quote I didn't end up clicking the article. So the quote from Tom Hanks in the headline of the article was that, yeah, we all knew, something along these lines of, like, we all knew that. And I guess when I see a headline like that or a quote like that, I wonder, like, Tom Hanks is one of these guys who in Hollywood, who is raised up very often either by his fans, which seems to be everyone, or by his peers in Hollywood as, like, this really amazing person. I have no reason to believe he isn't an amazing person. But I wonder about men in Tom Hanks's position who knew this was happening and said nothing until the women came forward and said, this happened to me. Because it seems to me that Tom Hanks is in an even better position to say, this is wrong and this is happening. And I won't name names, because if these women don't feel comfortable coming forward, they shouldn't have to. But I noticed this as a man, and as a man, I cannot stand for this. I can't stand by. But that's not really what's happening, right? This is something that's happening, like, in retrospect, which is just so strange to me.
And you can't even use the pecking order argument, because he's pretty high up there. Like, it is
Tom Hanks is.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter who Tom Hanks pisses off, because
someone else is going to want him in their movie, you know?
Right. And, like, it's like, hey, man, why didn't you?
You could have said something. You could have even if you had said something. And I don't mean, because we also have Louis C.K. Mm-hmm. His allegations are out there right now. And, of course, his statement was, this is true about me. And you have, but I feel like in comedy, and this was true with Bill Cosby, back when that was going on, or is still going on, when those allegations came out, it's like oh, and, you know, suddenly these jokes that other comedians were making make sense. It's like suddenly this joke about Bill Cosby is one that you're like, oh, I understand what that comedian was saying now. But the making a joke about a situation that not everyone is in on isn't actually bringing anything to light. When you make a statement that's like sort of hinting at what is actually going on there, but isn't actually condemning, that doesn't, to me, that, you know, that, what does that do? What does that accomplish?
Right. Like, this is not literature. This is not a book where you want the audience to like slowly figure these things out. It's like, no, the shitty thing is going on.
Yeah.
Just step up and say it.
Yeah, it's not an Agatha Christie novel. Like, yeah. I don't want to have to put the pieces together. If you know something, say something. And I don't mean that survivors are obligated to come forward. That's not what I mean by that. Because obviously they know something's going on. Mm-hmm. But because that's a really difficult decision to make. Because the culture is such that, you know,
who's going to believe you? Yeah.
Who's going to believe me? And you're risking something by coming forward.
Just going with that, like my own guilt from that, like in high school. Yeah, you know, I had a few friends who things like this happened to. And, you know, at the time, you know, I was 17. I didn't know how to deal with this. And so I was part of the problem. You know, I didn't fully believe them. And then looking back, you know, it's like, oh, like, how could I? And it's, yeah, I understand the fear of why somebody wouldn't want to, because there are people like I was when I was younger, because they don't know how to deal with that information.
Right.
And that's part of the not believing.
Right. And yeah, and to a certain degree, you know, when you're 17, no one has told you how to deal with that information.
Yeah.
You know, you have no, it's, you know, your first time experiencing, taking in that information. Yeah. It's not really.
Like, I'm small town Wyoming.
Right, right.
I'm raised in a household and a religion to believe that everyone's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just, these weren't things that I knew anything about. I was not prepared.
To me, obviously, the distinction between a 17-year-old who's receiving this information for the first time about someone close to him is in a really specifically different place than, say, than a grown adult, fully adult, been adult for a long time man who has seen this happen time and again and has said nothing. Because that man presumably knows that this is wrong, has seen it happen often enough that he knows, or maybe that's a presumption that I shouldn't be making, because I wonder about, you know, the, like, the hashtag Me Too campaign, the idea being that men are surprised, generally speaking, not all men, of course, but like generally speaking, men seem to be surprised that they know people to whom this has happened. And I think that goes back to the fact that I'm sure they've all been told at some point or not, and whether or not they believed it is in question. But I also read a tweet earlier today that's like every single woman you talk to is like, oh yeah, I can name several people to whom this has happened. This is pervasive. Oh, an experience as a woman in the world. And yet you don't hear, when you ask men, they couldn't, they're like, I don't know any of my friends who are assaulting people or sexually harassing people or any of these things. And statistically, it just seems impossible. It's like, how do you, and, you know, the question becomes, why isn't it being recognized? Because I think that's a genuine thing. It's not that men are like, I think sometimes men are turning a blind eye, but I think oftentimes they just don't realize. They're like, I have no idea that my friend did this thing, which is odd, because like surely they know something happened, right?
I think another big part of this is, and I get this a lot with the environment, the religious environment I grew up in, is during the Me Too thing, I saw a few women post like, you know, I've been trying to put my feelings, put my thoughts together on this, and so-and-so posted this that makes the most sense. And it's one of those, I was always raised to be around good men and never to do such and such. And so I've never experienced this. And, you know, and like at the end, I think it thanked the good men, but it's still, what it's still implying is you chose to be in that situation with that guy. And I read those and I cringe and I think, do you not know how many of your friends who probably went to a school like BYU expecting to be safe, who this happened to, they thought they were with a safe guy.
Right.
They were doing nothing wrong. And then this happened.
Because you're Mormon. We should, we should let people know.
Hi, I'm, I'm your resident gay Mormon.
Yep.
Hi.
Yeah. So, and another thing to think about that you sort of just brought up in these sort of Facebook posts of like, that sort of don't explicitly shift the blame, but definitely do place the blame on on the victim.
But in
the case of Roy Moore, it's pedophilia. These are right. underage girls who cannot and could never have had any culpability there. And like, not that any women could have any culpability there, but like, there's no argument to be made that a 14-year-old could have ever chosen to be in the company of this person
who's twice their age.
Right.
But the article was saying how before any other Republican, the Mormon Republicans, they were the first to condemn him.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating, but also to me makes sense. Again, like having grown up with that, Mormons are very big on the, like, if the, on calling people to repentance, like, if the evidence is there, it's right. like, okay, like, you done messed up, kid.
Right.
Like, I'm not.
It's a nice way of putting
we're it. We're not going to deal with this. I mean, we're going to deal with this by saying, you know, like.
By condemning that behavior.
Yeah, and telling other people
to do the like, same.
It's people like this that are making the Republican Party the shit show that it is right now.
There were a lot of really interesting statistics in that article. It was written by somebody who is not Mormon, who has written satire about the Mormon community in the past. His whole point was I wasn't surprised to hear this fact, that statistic that Mormons were the first ones to be like, no way. I believe the allegations, and I can't, this person is not someone I can support, because that's not behavior I can condone, like, even a little bit. And it's something interesting as well about the Roy Moore case is that Mitch McConnell today, also even Mitch McConnell today.
He's
saying, I believe these people. I believe these women who are coming forward. And I can't back someone who did that. I think, and rightfully so. I think oftentimes we think of Mitch McConnell as like the big bad of the Republican Party.
Right,
and
right. I think if the Republican Party were an organization and we were the Scooby Gang,
Buffy, he's the guy that we would be like.
He's the demon, the big bad of the season.
Yeah. I think that especially, like, both of us being part of the LGBT community, I feel like that's very well placed. And this is what, you know, but I'm also going to give him props for saying that, for doing that and saying it the way he did, which is, I believe these people. I believe the allegations.
It feels very alternate reality that happened. But considering what's happened the past year, who got elected, anything's possible.
Right. But that's also sort of wild, right? Because we know that Donald Trump is also has also been accused of these things, has also done these things, has said, he said it out loud. He said, I do these things, right? Yeah. So, Mitch McConnell is not condemning him. He's not saying, I believe those allegations, right? Mormons are, though. That was another statistic in that article, that Mormons were like...
Most Mormons did not vote. Well,
not
that's the wrong way to put it. Trump was not the most voted for person in Utah, which I did not know that. I thought he was. I knew that Evan McMullen garnered a surprising amount of support. I think it was 2%, maybe 3%. I'm not 100% sure on that statistic, but...
But higher than anywhere else.
Yeah, and I thought that after that, it was Donald Trump, and that was not the case. And that very much surprised me, because I do know people from church who, you know, support Trump.
Right.
And I sort of assumed that if my friends weren't Democrats, they probably voted. That's really bad. That was generalizing. Maybe I didn't believe that, but I thought a large portion of them probably did vote for him.
Right.
And it's nice that I'm probably wrong.
Yeah, that you, like, at least a good chunk of them.
Yeah.
You were wrong.
If any of you are listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry for generalizing.
But yeah, I mean, that's our current news right now, which is, on the one hand, I think it's really good that these things are coming to light, in the sense that people who maybe didn't realize or didn't believe before how pervasive this is are starting to sort of realize that now. That's a good thing. It sucks that this is so pervasive and that... it's taken this long for women who come forward to be believed in this way. I don't necessarily know what to attribute that to. I think social media has something to do with it. I think that the actions, and this is like going back historically, the actions of Anita Hill, the actions of Monica Lewinsky and the women who accused Bill Clinton, I think that they all attribute to that.
They paved the way.
They paved the way, despite the fact that they were very much not believed, maybe with the exception of Monica Lewinsky, who had like a very clear evidence, but that this had happened.
Actually, Monica Lewinsky is the only... We were talking about this earlier. That's the only thing. I had no idea about all of the other allegations against Bill Clinton.
I mean, well, we were quite young when that was happening.
True. And like he's been remembered for, or that I've learned about him, had nothing to do with that, just his presidential accomplishments, Oh, by the way, he's also kind of a scumbag.
Right. Like, people, like, generally seemed to know, but it was always sort of linked to other things. You know, obviously his infidelity it was linked to, but it was like a general infidelity that implies generally consent was there, which is not the case, at least not entirely the case. And yeah, I think that article, again, it's titled Bill Clinton, A Reckoning. I would recommend it. It's at The Atlantic. I think that opened up a lot of channels for us to talk about all of these allegations that are coming out. Because that really, as I was saying, that really does feel like all of the news right now.
Every day. Someone new.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, that news is super hard for some of our students here, everyone, everywhere. Even people who are not victims of sexual, have not been victims of sexual assault or harassment. Just taking in just the sheer number is hard. So, like, I guess my message to them is, like, stick in there. Like, stay strong. Avoid the news on days when it's like, this is too much for me. And we'll keep you posted on new stories, hopefully stories on other topics in the future. All right. So after after we do our heavy news section, we always follow it up with a chaser.
Yeah, you know, the salt, the lemon,
the other alcohol, water.
The water.
The water, the fruit juice.
Our wine was turned back to water.
It was, and now we're drinking the water.
Ooh.
Hydrating.
I was going to say opposite Jesus, but then that's Antichrist, and this is not Rosemary's Baby.
How do you know?
Oh, God. For those who don't know, Emily, when she gets her hair cut, tells the barber, the hairstylist, that she wants her hair to look like Mia Farrow's in Rosemary's Child.
Rosemary's Baby is the name of that movie.
I see the way she treats me. Help me.
I do say that, and some hairdressers are like, I don't know what that means, and then I pull up a picture, and some of them are like, is that really the comparison you want to make? And I'm like, yes, it is. But I'm always understood. I always end up getting the haircut I want. So that's always good.
Yeah. Spoilers if you haven't seen the ending to this, 40-year-old movie. She should have stabbed someone. She would have felt so much better had she stabbed someone.
Yeah, but I mean, I think the moral of the story is that she's, a genuinely good person.
Which would have been a great twist if she had stabbed somebody and they were all like, oh my gosh, maybe she's not the pure person she thought we was.
She thought we was.
Yeah, I mean, well, we thought she was. Yes. This baby is no longer our true Antichrist. And then problem solved. I don't know.
Maybe. I mean, in the Mika McIntosh version of Rosemary's Baby, Rosemary murders the Satanists at the end.
Yeah, she would have killed everyone.
But not her baby.
Yeah, that would be going
too far.
Yeah.
That's too far.
But she'd kill everyone else, then she would train the baby to be good. And so, you know, you get this cliche, the devil, it's Hellboy.
This is how Hellboy. Wait, you're just trying to write Hellboy right now. It's your pitch for the next Hellboy movie.
Guilty.
Yeah.
Guilty. I'm sorry. I'm just hoping I can get Guillermo del Toro to sign on to this and come back to Hellboy. That's all I'm trying to do.
I think that's a fair goal. Anyway, we always follow up with a chaser, which this was our a very long introduction to. Today, what chaser do we want to do today, Mika?
Oh boy, we have so many options.
We do have options. Let's start today with, we touched on the Antichrist, so might as well. What's the good word today, Mika?
The good word today is pernicious.
Pernicious. What's pernicious mean?
I have no idea. I've heard it somewhere.
Pernicious or pernicious?
Both.
Okay.
Maybe. You know what? You keep talking. Yeah. I'm going to look up this
word. You're going to Google it.
What do you
pernicious,
think?
Pernicious, I know, means ill-meaning, malicious. Pernicious and malicious would be the same. But pernicious, I don't think I've ever heard before. So...
Oh, there's no internet connection.
These computers are fake. This is a film set.
Oh, no, you're right. Pernicious.
Okay, pernicious.
Fine. Maybe that's not the word of the day.
Okay.
The good word, the true good word, is diaphanous.
What's diaphanous mean?
Let me tell you, diaphanous means light, delicate, and translucent.
Like
an angel.
like a bubble is what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah.
But
Pop.
Glinda in her bubble in The Wizard of Oz, that classic film starring Judy Garland.
Diaphanous.
Diaphanous.
The song that started all of the songs about rainbows.
Yeah, somewhere over the rainbow.
Leading to why are there so many songs about rainbows?
Yeah, almost immediately, I feel. Like, I don't know that there are actually many Rainbow songs. Maybe I'm wrong, that there are many Rainbow songs between Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Rainbow Connection.
Boy, Hattie, there have to be.
There must be.
Why else would the Muppets...
Why else would Kermit be, like, having this question?
I trust you, Kermit.
I trust it. I trust Kermit. Literally everything Kermit says, I trust. That's probably actually a true fact about me.
Why are there so many songs about rainbows? What's on the other side?
Oh, flawless Kermit impression. Oh, man.
Just saying, diaphanous. It's a great word.
It is a great word. And yeah. It's a good word. Actually, it's probably a good word to use in critique. Like, if something were diaphanous, you could describe it that way. You'd impress all your friends in critique. Here at SAIC, School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Yeah. Or they'd think you were stuck up and say, just use words everyone knows. Jeez. That's not true.
No, that's not true. I would respect you. If you have a story about when you use diaphanous in your critique, which I now know you are all going to do, you can just email either Mika or I your story, and then maybe we'll read it on the air.
We probably will. I can't make that promise, but we probably will.
Yeah, we probably will. I mean, to be honest, we probably will.
Yeah, for it would be a nice chaser.
It would be, yeah.
Here's this lovely story using the word diaphanous.
Yes.
Try and keep it around 500 words.
Yeah, or less.
Yeah,
or less.
Flash fiction. Flash fiction is great.
Yes. Or it wouldn't be fiction if it's the story of your critique day.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking stories in general.
Well, any story, too.
Yeah.
Use the word diaphanous.
I think it would be more fun if it were a critique story, especially with Critique Week coming up.
That's true. If you can work in a way to use diaphanous if you're sitting on someone else's critique panel, or if you are being critiqued in Critique Week, particularly if you're being critiqued, if you can work in the word diaphanous, I think that would be kind of wonderful.
I think it would be wonderful if you used it incorrectly and nobody corrected you.
Yeah, because like, what if your critique panel doesn't know what it means?
Yeah. It's a great way to just have a little bit of... It's a good way to feel smug if you use the word incorrectly and no one knows what it means.
So no one knows that you used it incorrectly except you, who like intentionally used it incorrectly? That's the sneakiest thing I've ever heard.
That's going to be my goal.
All right.
I'm going to be prepared.
That's solid.
I'm going to dress as a Boy Scout.
Perfect. Then they will definitely trust you.
Yeah. Scouts are always prepared. I am prepared to define this word incorrectly for them.
Yeah, and just ruin them until someone they use it and someone is like, you use that incorrectly.
Yeah. Or they're going to think, who is this kid? I'm not going to use that word.
That's true. They might think that. Who knows?
Or they might not. I mean, people can be nice.
That's true. That's actually a good note to end on. People can be nice. And to all those folks out there, please be nice so that our news is like about nice people doing nice things for each other.
Remember, kids, it's always good to be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has been F News. Stay cool, cats. Stay cool.
Yeah, stay cool out there. This is Emily Rich.
This is Mika McIntosh.
Signing off.
Okay, bye. We're not scarecrows. We're
counting crows.